Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of the Empire Podcast all about Cartoon Saloon. I'm your host, Helen O'Hara, and with me are two colleagues of such lethal cunning. Please welcome Ben Travis.
Hello, I heard there was a podcast recording about animation happening and I just turned up. You didn't invite me, I'm here anyway.
It is inevitable, you are like Thanos that way. And of course, we're also joined by John Nugent. Hello.
Hello, I don't have a podcast about animation, but I'm happy to be here.
I'm happy to have you here as well, and both of you. So just to explain what we're doing here, we recently did an interview with the founders of the Irish animation studio Cartoon Saloon. And by that, I mean Tom Moore, Paul Young and Nora Toomey, because they are currently celebrating the studio's 25th anniversary. And there's a season of their films that's been shown at the BFI in London to celebrate. Now, of course, with our usual flair for wonderful timing, we've missed most of the season, which I think culminates this weekend. But we did want to mark the occasion anyway, because they're ace, quite frankly. Not for nothing were they nominated for Best Animated Feature, I think four times in a row, for The Secret of Kells, Song of the Sea, The Breadwinner, and Wolfwalkers. That's just a fraction of their output, but it is, let's be honest, the cream of the crop. So Ben, John, and myself are going to have a bit of a chat about their films. But first, please enjoy the interview that I did recently with Tom, Paul, and Nora.
Paul Young, Norma Toohey, and Tom Moore. How are you doing?
Good,
thank you. How are you?
Very well, thank you. And I cannot believe it is 25 years this year of Cartoon Saloon. Congratulations. You are already a quarter the age of Disney. That's got to feel good.
Feels like we just started somehow, you know?
Yeah.
We did. In the scale of everything to do with animation and how long everything takes with animation, I think it's all good.
Yeah, I was going to ask, because, you know, it takes, what, maybe 5 years from start to finish on a film? I don't know, maybe more, maybe less. But, you know, it must be the equivalent of a live action studio being about 4 years in.
It is. I mean, and again, if you take it from like original concept all the way through, I mean, which is similar enough with live action, you often hear directors talking about, you know, them finally producing something that took them like 10 or 20 years to make, or sometimes they have to, you know, work off the success of, you know, something that they do, some big blockbuster to get to make their passion project. I guess we were lucky and met the right people at the right time and put the right amount of work in, I guess, over the first number of years anyway, you know, which was really great.
I imagine the right amount of work was all of the work. Is that about right?
Well, we were a little late on the call because we're up to our eyes all the time. It's amazing like how much work it is, and not just the drawing, just all the running of so many people and everything. So we're happy victims of our success, you know?
I mean, these are good problems to have. So what size is the studio now? Talk me through it.
We're about 100 people at the moment. We are usually between like 100 and 250, depending on where we are with particular projects. So right now we're winding down a couple of projects. We have a whole new slate of new things coming up. So yeah, we're kind of comfortable around the 150, 200 mark, I guess. So yeah, that's a lot of artists, animators and support staff that come together here in Kilkenny to make our films. And of course, we work with co-producers around the world as well. That's a really integral part, especially of the feature films that we make. We work with a co-producer in Luxembourg quite a lot at the Studio 352 there, and with Folivari in France. And so we continue to have kind of great relationships with like-minded, similar-sized companies from around the world who just want to tell the same kind of stories we do.
I mean, that was one of the things I wanted to ask about, you know, is this the way to be independent now? Because, you know, I think after the success of Secret of Kells, I think you had offers presumably from bigger places to kind of get folded into bigger companies where you would have been maybe a cog in the machine. But, you know, you've kept your own course, you've kept a kind of belief in what you guys do. But does that mean partnerships rather than sort of buyouts, I guess, are the way to go?
Well, what's nice is we're finding a nice happy medium now, finally. Like for a long time, we kind of stuck to our guns, and I found the European co-production model kind of the best way to make my own stuff, because there was no one big funder telling me what to do. It was lots of little funders and lots of partners. And so the kind of director slash producer position I was in was a very powerful one. I got to keep my, for better or worse, you know, my artistic final say and final cut and all of that stuff that's really valuable to people in Hollywood, you know, because it was just a factor of how the project was funded. And then, you know, we've had some happy relationships more recently with, you know, bigger studios that come to us and thankfully haven't seen what we do. When we do have artistic autonomy, they're willing to give us a lot of artistic freedom. And so Paul had a really successful experience recently making a short film with Lucasfilm, you know, and it came out feeling very cartoon saloony. So I'm happy to say that we can kind of do both, you know.
Yeah. It really did. That was adorable, actually. I wanted to ask about that kind of animation community as well, because it feels like, you know, I've talked to some of you guys over the years. I've talked to Aardman, you know, I've talked to, as well as, you know, Pixar and DreamWorks and the rest. And it feels like there is an animation community. There's a lot of kind of talking to each other, comparing notes, comparing experiences in making films. I mean, how valuable is that to you guys?
Yeah, I mean, the community and also us, look, like, you kind of look to other companies like Ghibli and Aardman as kind of like, are we a bit like them? Do we, like, what parts of their story do we want to kind of emulate, and what parts are unique to us? Because they're all existing in different environments at different times with different personalities. But those are the types of companies that we hope to be like. And we're fans of so many studios around the world. And there's really, you know, there's Leica, but then there's really exciting stuff coming up in Europe. Lots of smaller studios there.
Yeah. And you're part of a chain as well. I'm aware that, like, we've often had people who start out as interns here and then they go and set up their own company, and then we co-produce with that company. So you're aware it's not just the heritage of what you might have been inspired by as a young person, but then also that you might help inspire, be part of the journey of you know, new artists coming up. So some of the people that our managing director Jerry Sharon, very early in our careers, met Tom and Paul at some animation markets and just said, it's, you know, he took them under his wing and kind of, you know, showed them who they should speak to and kind of gave them advice of, it's always good to just show up, even if you've nothing to show, just be there so that you're just part of people's awareness. But that kind of sharing attitude is, really throughout the entire animation industry. I think there is a lot to be said for people who continue to draw, you know, when they grow up, you know, when you, you know, that watershed when you're 10 and you start drawing because you might feel it's a bit, embarrassing or whatever. The people who continue on kind of still acts as part of their imagination, but also part of their forward thinking, that they're able to kind of imagine, well, you know, that you can't see the use of this meeting, for example, but in the future there might be, you know, this might spark something in somebody else's imagination about an opportunity that might be, you know, that might, you know, become available in 5 years' time.
I kind of call it for what it is. It's fellow geeks hanging out, talking tunes and comics and things we love. And I think that's why the community is so warm. I count as personal friends some people that had originally been heroes of mine when I was studying animation, you know, and that's what's lovely about this medium, this art form. Everyone in it is doing it because they love it, and we're like Revenge of the Nerds now or something. You know, we're the ones in school reading comics and doing flip books in the corner of our school books, you know.
I think I remember talking to you, Paul and Tom, at the Belfast Film Festival the year you were just launching Secret of Kells. It was just I think it was at the festival maybe, and about, it hadn't even come out yet, but you'd been to visit DreamWorks and you were raving about that wordless scene in How to Train Your Dragon, you know, so you were just like excited by other people's work as much as your own, which was really lovely to see. And I think vice versa, having talked to people at DreamWorks now who rave similarly about your Song of the Sea and everything else, you know.
The people in America were really welcoming and good to us, actually. And in the UK, when we go over there, yeah, it's like a kind of, even in Ireland, we call it like a co-opetition between the studios, because it takes so long to get a TV series off the ground or a film get off the ground. You kind of celebrate when other people actually manage to do it. I think they should give prizes to people just for getting the money together. Like, if you can just finish a film, you should get a big parade or something, because it's so difficult just to get it. It takes so long. So there's a sort of, I think everybody who works in animation understands how hard it is to get a film made or a TV series. So they kind of celebrate, you really have an opportunity to celebrate each other, because it's very rare you're coming out at the same time. It can take you 4 to 5 years to get one film done, or similar for a TV series. You're not like going, oh my God, next year they're going to have this, or it's never like that. So you just, as if you can get it finished, it's brilliant, and everybody kind of celebrates it. And we've always felt that because we come from a very reasonably remote part of Ireland. And so our travel has been, part of the fun for me was being able to go out and travel as well and meet people. In the early days, I found that really invigorating because it's so welcoming, yeah. The whole animation community, yeah, everywhere.
Well, tell me about something like the Star Wars experience. Like, what's the timeline on something like that? Does the fact that it's a big studio that you're working with make it faster, or just mean that there's so much red tape you could throw yourself a parade?
Oh gosh, I didn't have that experience with them. The executives in Lucasfilm, Jackie James and Josh and Jane, there, the people that we worked with, it started with just a phone call with them asking, would we like to do one? You know, the Star Wars Visions, where they had done anime ones. And so it was a lovely compliment to be asked. And it was very much like, we want you to do it cartoon saloon style. We want it to be a cartoon saloon does Star Wars. So there was great freedom to it where there was no canon involved. We didn't have to worry about, you know, not messing up any major storylines. It was just like, let's do it. Let's open it up to, like, let's do a short that's kind of almost almost like a fairy tale of Star Wars. It could be anything. They really left it open for the studios to interpret the galaxy or the universe the way you wanted to. So it was really obviously it's great because they come with the budget. So you don't have to worry about raising the budget. They allowed us to pitch two ideas and we knew they were going to do one. And thankfully from the get-go, they really love the kind of ghost story type Irishy flavored Star Wars story we came up with. So it was really easy. It was a really lovely experience actually with them. It was a really good experience. And we didn't feel the kind of notes that we got were very helpful rather than blocking anything. It was like encouraging. Yeah. You know, so very good experience, I must say.
And it did feel very much, you know, in the tradition of Song of the Sea or Wolfwalkers one of your other films, which is what you want from
a little
from
bit Sci-Fi. Older. We were able to do something a bit darker. Mm. It was nice to be able to play in something that was quite spooky or was quite dark, actually, yeah. A little bit. But we always go a little bit dark anyway.
There's definitely scary bits in your films, because I've tried watching them with my small niece and nephew. It's interesting to me. I mean, is that something you want to kind of explore more? Would you like to do more kind of quote unquote adult animation, whatever that means? Because you know, you had Puff and Rock, super cute last year, but definitely skewing younger. You know, is it something that you want to kind of expand the age range, or are you kind of in a groove that's working?
There's a few things on the slate coming up. I would say Nora and Tom and myself are working hard on what the next 6-7 years output is going to be, or the next 10 years, actually. What am I saying? 6 years is like one film. So the next, you know, so I think there's a few things where we are still kind of skewing, like, for kids, and there's a few preschools in there. And I suppose the Star Wars short is probably at a certain upper range that we've ever gone. I don't know if we have anything at the moment that goes really into the more adult, maybe more mature thing. I think it's just our wheelhouse has always been.
Between the three of us as creators and directors, slightly different takes on things. I know for me that I would be happy to finish out my career making movies that are like the trilogy I did, where I think it's kind of a privilege because it might be somebody's first ever movie. Like, I still remember the first movies I saw way more than the movies I've seen as an adult. And I always end up, because I feel like there's a responsibility to, when you're making something independent, to do something that probably wouldn't get made in the mainstream. So they're not, you know, pure kiddie fare. They're always pretty tough themes, and even times in history that are reasonably dark. So I always find it an interesting and a cool challenge to try and make a movie that, like, you know, 8 to 10 year olds can enjoy, but, you know, adults can also enjoy. I always love, there's a Chuck Jones quote that I always remember when we get asked questions like that. And he says, your job is to make something as sophisticated and interesting enough to keep children entertained, but simple enough for adults to be able to enjoy it as well. You know,
that's about right, I think, because watching my small niece and nephew consume things and pick holes in things has been really eye-opening for me as a film critic. So
honest, they don't pull any punches.
Yeah. No, and they often want to challenge themselves. Oftentimes as adults, we want to wrap them in cotton wool and not have them, you know, be challenged in any kind of a way. Somebody that works with was talking about her daughter who's 9, who's reading the Harry Potter, series, but she's now sleeping with the light on as well. You know, she's but then what really wants to be part of the world and really. So she's finding something safe within her environment to challenge herself as she grows. If you can be part of that in some way and also, you know, provide entertainment and joy and, you know, a kind of sophistication of storytelling that really speaks to audiences. I mean, that's all you can really hope for. But that's something that the length of time that it takes to even craft a storyboard or an animatic for an animated feature, it allows you to layer your story in a way where adults will see something and, you know, younger audiences will see something else and then younger audiences again will see something. But our job isn't to not challenge anyone ever, you know?
Yeah. So what can you tell us about what's next? Is it Julianne, I think, was on the slate at one point? Is that going to be next thing up?
That would be the next feature. It's at the early stages now. We're on like probably fifth or sixth draft of the script, and we're beginning boarding, which is very exciting. We just had a big meeting about it the other day with the whole team, which was great. And so that will be the next. We're still, you know, as usual, it's a European co-production. We're finding partners and we're still sort of starting, hoping that last bit of finance will come in, which is always where you're still trying to we're still applying for things, but we're very confident that we'll get there. And then there'll be another feature that I will do. Tom is a really interesting feature coming up, and then the whole slate of a few TV ideas.
We're kind of expanding the Cartoon Saluniverse a bit, you know. We're looking at like not direct sequels or anything like it, but we're looking at the kind of the DNA and the heart of the stuff that we've done before and seeing how can we push that forward. So for example, the feature that I'm working on isn't signed to anybody yet, so I can talk about it until someone tells me not to. And it's about the friendship between Ireland and the Choctaw Nation in America. Happened during the famine, and you know, there's a little bit of my own family history woven into the emigration story that so many Irish families have. And I'm really enjoying exploring another culture, working with Choctaw consultants, a Choctaw writer, and digging into my own family history from around the time at that time of all the emigration. And I think there's like rich stories to be told about Irish people abroad, because we've definitely spread ourselves as a small nation. I think if everyone came home, we'd sink the island, you know what I mean? So there's stories to be told. So that's the kind of stuff I'm interested in looking at.
I'm always fascinated that there aren't more Irish films and TV out there, because there's such a large Irish American population, for example, in the States. You know, you think we'd be drowning in it. I wonder sometimes if it's that they have a very fixed idea of what Ireland is that doesn't necessarily incorporate everything it is, you know, sort of the legends, the mythology, the kind of culture of Ireland. I think they have a slightly cottagey based vision of what the country is.
I think that I've been lucky that in my career I've seen that changing. Like I remember St. Patrick's Day in Boston, and we were showing Secret of Kells, and it had been nominated for an Oscar, so it had a bit of buzz around it, and the cinemas were full, and people were buying me pints. So maybe I'm remembering it in a rosy way, but I remember sort of having the feeling of like, yeah, people are up for talking about what Ireland really is and what the real is. You know, they didn't need it to be dressed up like Darby O'Gill. They were happy and interested, you know. And these were people who were maybe second and third generation who considered themselves Irish, but they were flocking to come and see it. So I think we're living through a time where people, identity and stuff is really important to people. And also people are interested in the real thing. And I think after all, like the films we make are our point of view. The next generation will tell Irish stories again, and it'll be different again because they're always changing. You know, they're always adapting to the times that you're living in. And there's a little grain of truth in them all that keeps them alive. But like, for example, like my version of the Selkie story and how I told that, like that's just one version, and the next generation will do something with it again. And that's what will keep it alive. And I think that's why Irish culture will kind of continue to seep out, you know, by staying relevant rather than fossilized into sort of plastic leprechauns or something, you know.
Just very quickly before we wrap up, can you tell me, you know, what animation you've been inspired by or that you've really enjoyed in the last couple of years? Is there anything that really stands out to you?
I delighted to see mainstream big budget animated films like the Spider-Verse or the Turtle that look like the comics I read in the 90s up on screen, because I was always frustrated that animation always looked like Disney style or anime style, and it's just drawings, so you can do anything. And comics were always so experimental. And even as a kid, I kind of wondered, did I prefer to work in comics because there was more artistic opportunity? So to see the language of comic books and illustration being freeing the medium up, I'm just a geek. Spider-Man, childhood.
Amazing. Yeah. You
know, and so Spider-Verse has knocked my socks off lately. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think you're starting to see just a lot of different kind of techniques being used in film as well. You're getting to see as well the generation of young people who were the first ones to choose what they wanted to watch themselves on streaming services, and their tastes being broadened and a following story, whether it's like something that was, you know, really cheaply created or something that like had, you know, a 200 million budget, they will just follow a story and follow good characters. And so seeing them grow. And I mean, a lot of them are storytellers themselves through social media. They found a way to tell their own stories. And so they have a completely different experience of what it is. And so that's just, yeah, it's really interesting. And seeing more people become filmmakers as well, you know, but when we started, it was just the sweet spot where people had stopped, you know, using rostrum cameras and, you know, cells and all of this. And it became more affordable for a couple of people to just get together with one or two computers and a couple of scanners, and that you could start making something. So we took advantage of that technological and digital breakthrough, you know, at the beginnings of the internet, where you could co-produce with a company in a different part of the world, different time zone, and you could communicate easily enough with each other. There's another technological breakthrough now.
I'm like the two guys. I'm very inspired by it. There seems to be a bit of a renaissance for kind of interesting artistic 2D animation that's leaking into almost, that was becoming kind of a CGI animation, become fairly crystallized into a certain type of way of doing things. And now 2D artistic expressionistic kind of animation and abstract animation is kind of bouncing in. And even just looking at the films that have come out lately, there was some amazing short films there that I've seen, some from South America that were also, there was one called Carne de Dio, which is definitely mature, which had beautiful artwork in it as well, and a beautiful French one. I'm trying to remember the name of that French one, that, anyway, we shouldn't be, but the brilliant. There's some great stories being told from France in particular, because it was always like we always found French animation very inspiring, because it was like bande dessinée comics, the way that the style of their films were so varied and are different looking from one to the next. We had this lovely influence from them, and then the great, what I would say great, probably more sometimes more powerful storytelling coming from like the UK and the US, sometimes a different type of storytelling. And so we had tried to mix it up. So there's a lovely clash of storytelling happening, artistic endeavors happening between Europe and UK and the US and now in South America, so many more.
Like, I think we're really lucky to be living through the maturity. Like in the 90s, I remember it was, again, a super geeky thing to go to the bottom shelf right at the back of the VHS shop to get Akira or Legend of the Overfiend or Fist of the North Star or Appleseed, all these like anime that I grew up on. They were like rare gems, and now they're like mainstream. Like young people only watch anime more than they watch Western animation. And I think it's really opened up the medium. Like, I remember back in the 90s bemoaning the fact that no one in the West would ever have made like an Akira. Yeah. And we were watching Akira going like, this is crazy. And this, and manga, like reading the comics from Japan, realizing, well, comics don't have to be the Beano or Batman. They can actually be about anything, you know? Yeah. And so I love that that's finally, I mean, I'm in my 40s now, late 40s now. It finally seems to be that the dream of the 90s has arrived, and it's like every subject matter is available, and there's audiences for every subject matter in comics and in animation, like it always has been in Japan, you know.
And films, we were just saying, like Chicken for Linda, Robot Dreams, Unicorn Wars, and short films as well. If you look at the crop of short films that come out Every year, and again, are accessible online. They're just incredible things. You're seeing amazing things happening with technique, and amazing things happening with storytelling, and then pushing the medium. I mean, you know, you're talking about family audiences for animation, but that's not to say that is just all that animation ever needs to be. And you know, there is a huge movement, you know, that talks about animation being film. And rather than a genre, I think.
And our friends in G Kids have enjoyed The Boy and the Heron being top of the US box office. Like, it's a really for, and not just for animation, but for kind of unusual animation or arty animation or something. It's a really great gem.
Yeah. Paul and I were talking just before we started about the My Neighbor Totoro stage show, which I just saw the other week, which is just out of this world. Absolutely incredible.
And we're going to go see it on Monday. Nice. Hey. Which I don't know when this podcast comes out, but Monday.
You'll be safely out again. You won't be mobbed on your way in, so you're okay. but no, it's an absolutely incredible thing. So it's lovely to see something like that, which again could not have been done, you know, 20 or 30 years ago. So it's exciting times anyway. Well, listen, I will let you get back to work. It sounds like you've got your hands full, and the 25th anniversary sort of season is continuing at the BFI. I know you guys, by the time this goes out, you will have spoken there. I'm sure you will have said incredible and interesting things. Have you got anything planned for your anniversary there in Kilkenny?
We have a few maybe interesting screenings, and we were planning a big party at the end of the year, because we also host a festival here in Kilkenny called Kilkenny Animated, where we bring, the whole point of it was to bring people we really like or are interested in over to talk to them in front of other people who might be interested, and also to sort of educate and illuminate people on, you know, what animation is and how it's made. So we might have a big do in October here, but we might trickle it through the year with a few different screenings. We actually have for the festival a giant inflatable screen, so we might be able to project stuff around the
top. Really lucky, like all our partners around the world are celebrating with us. Like in Japan, they're re-releasing Song of the Sea. In Portugal, Monstra Festival are dedicating a lot of the festival to our slate or stuff we've made so far, and so on. There's stuff happening everywhere, so it's really lovely. It feels like all the friendships we made over the 25 years are kind of coming to fruition, and it's really nice.
Yeah, awesome. I have to really thank the BFI people, because they kind of kicked it off. We weren't quite thinking like that, and then they went, "Here, you're 25 years," and we went, "Oh gosh, yes, we are." It was almost like that. Yeah. And they were very good to do a whole month, which is really, really lovely of them to do that.
And we've had a UK premiere of most of our films there. I think from Song of the Sea, The Breadwinner, Wolfwalkers, we're all premiered there.
It's great.
Yeah. Well, happy birthday. Hope you have lots of cake all year, as I understand it. Talk to you soon. Look forward to seeing whatever's next.
Thanks very much, Helen.
Cheers. All right. Well, that was Tom Moore, Paul Young and Nora Toomey. Ben and John, hello again. Tell me about this. What was your introduction to Cartoon Saloon? How did you learn that they existed?
For me, it was around Song of the Sea. I watched Song of the Sea at home. I think I was hungover. It was a weekend. And I was like, hey, I need something kind of easy and nice to watch. I've heard this is really good. And I put it on and was just emotionally swept away by this movie. I think it both cured my hangover and completely destroyed me for the rest of the day. And from that moment, I was just enchanted by them. I love the films of theirs that I've seen, and they have a very distinctive style that I think is what we kind of love about them. How you know a Cartoon Saloon project when you see it.
How about you, John?
Yeah, Song of the Sea was my entry point as well. I went to a press screening of it with a friend, a male friend, and, you know, we're both like just two grown-ups being like, oh, why are we going to see some stupid kids film for kids? And then at the end, we were both like, no, I wasn't crying. That was just, that was just...
My eyes are just sweaty.
Yeah, my face is just leaking a bit. It's nothing, you know, trying to be all... And then we eventually admitted that, it was an emotional whirlwind and an incredibly beautiful one at that. And, you know, Cartoon Saloon gets described as sort of like the Irish Studio Ghibli a lot, which is a sort of very lazy thing that journalists like to say. But they are very much their own thing. They're very distinctive and they are Irish to their core, and they bring a lot of this like Irish mythology, especially in those three films that I think they've called a trilogy now, like Secret of the Kells, Song of the Sea and Wolfwalkers, which really like draw from that sort of tradition and use a lot of that imagery and that storytelling techniques. There's really no one else like them. They're kind of unique in that way.
Well, not to sound fancy, but I was on them way earlier than you guys. So one time in my life, I've actually been invited to the Belfast Film Festival to I think I was speaking to school children there, and they very kindly invited me out for dinner that evening. And I was sitting next to this guy, this filmmaker who I didn't really know much about at the beginning of dinner, and we just got chatting. And it turned out that was Tom Moore. So Paul Young was just seated across the table from us, and they were there talking about The Secret of Kells. And just the concept of that, I hadn't seen the film at that point. I wasn't at the screening that they were holding at the festival that year. But just the concept, I was like, I need to see this film. This is amazing. The Book of Kells, for anybody who doesn't know, is an Irish illuminated Bible from something like the 8th century. It's very old, but it is absolutely elaborately illuminated and painted. We had a facsimile copy in our house because it's just such a big part of kind of Irish culture. It's a treasure of the country. It's held at Trinity College in Dublin. You can go and visit it. And the idea of sort of hooking an animated film around the creation of that book, I thought was amazing, absolutely amazing. And the way that they incorporate the art of the book and the themes, the themes of the art into the film is just jaw-droppingly beautiful. So yeah, I was basically on board from then on.
Yeah.
And I think the things you say there, Helen, for me is why, as much as I get what you're saying, John, that the like Irish Studio Ghibli thing feels reductive, but I think what people mean by that when they say it is that just as Ghibli films feel like they're presented in an art style and have storytelling that feels very culturally specific to Japan, I think people feel that with Cartoon Saloon movies, especially, as you say, the sort of Irish folklore trilogy, in drawing from art styles from Ireland, in like specific, culturally specific folk stories from Ireland, bringing that into their work. I think maybe in a more general sense, people don't quite have the language necessarily to distinguish, well, this is animated, but it doesn't feel like Disney or Pixar. And I guess it's kind of Ghibli-ish because it feels kind of artsy. But I think there is something in the inherent Irishness of it all, from the way that it looks to the sorts of stories they tell and how they tell them. I can see that kind of being why they get that label sometimes.
Yeah, they're very much their own thing. And also, I should add, not to sound fancy, but I actually own an original piece of Cartoon Saloon art in the sense that... So I interviewed Tom Moore and Ross Stewart for Wolfwalkers a couple of years ago, and it was over Zoom, and Tom Moore kept looking down, and I was a bit confused, like, why he wasn't making eye contact with me over the Zoom camera. And then, like, halfway through the interview, he, like, said, "You've got great hair, John," and then just showed me that. And that's...
Oh, my goodness.
A portrait.
Oh my
God. Well,
hang on. Okay, so it's not just that you have Cartoon Saloon art, because I have a sketch, like, you know, of one of the characters from The Secret of Kells. You have Cartoon Saloon art of yourself.
Of
you
me,
have
yes.
a portrait.
Sorry, I know this doesn't really translate in podcast form, but yes, Tom Moore did an unauthorized portrait of me, which I was more than happy for him to do. And I was like ridiculously flattering that this...
Amazing.
You might be listening to this thinking, oh, what, like a hasty sketch in a Zoom? It maybe was... No, this is the most lavishly detailed picture of John I've seen. It's more lavish and detailed than actual John on the screen in front of me right now.
Yeah, if anything, it's over-flattering. I look far too nice. But I'm basically canon, is what I'm saying, is that I exist within the Cartoon Saloon universe.
I don't have any Cartoon Saloon artwork. If you happen to have a spare Selkie around that needs a home... please send it my way.
Wow. Thanks, Ben. Really, really professional there. That's great. But no, it is lovely to see, you know, something that is so determined to go its own way and forge its own path. And I think I mean, they didn't talk too much about it in the interview, but reading between the lines and you know, having read interviews with them over the years and done interviews with them over the years, I think it has sometimes been a struggle to be an independent animation studio. We know that Aardman, for example, has come under pressure from bigger partners over the years, distributors and studio co-partners, to cast big stars, you know, rather than the character actors that they have maybe worked with in the past. And I think it's notable that Cartoon Saloon, really, if you look at their cast lists and everything else, almost no stars. Brendan Gleeson, fantastic, but almost no other recognizable names in that sense, because they are determined to just work with the people they want to work with and leave those considerations aside. And maybe that is why we've had four Oscar nominations in a row for those four films.
Yeah, they've obviously, like a lot of the smaller, like Aardman has, they've worked with bigger distributors and studios. So I think Wolfwalkers was with Apple, and My Father's Dragon was for Netflix, but they still retain that unique sensibility. You know, even My Father's Dragon, which is maybe their most, like, you could say, commercial film, it's still got that sort of gorgeous, like, almost abstract illustrative style. The backgrounds feel like they're from some incredible picture book for kids. It's driven more by the art than by, you know, the commercial viability. And it's amazing. I mean, I think they're still based in Kilkenny, you know, the same digs they've had for years, basically in the high town, in this, you know, old stone building, a bit like Aardman in, you know, like a Bristol sort of industrial estate. Like, they still have these sort of quite humble origins, and you feel that in the films. I think you get a sense of their personality as filmmakers in all of their films.
Completely. And I hope that they can just stay the course with what they're doing, because it must be really difficult, as you say, for them to stay independent, to not feel overwhelming pressure to do those things like casting big name actors and maybe compromising certain bits of their kind of artistic values to try and get that bigger recognition. But I think what they've done with the handful of feature films they've made is cultivate a really, really strong reputation for themselves within the animation industry, within Irish cinema, within, you know, the British Isles in general. I feel like they're becoming more well-known here. And that maybe, like, if they just keep doing that and building up this incredible body of work, at some point they will get their crossover moments. As you say, Wolfwalkers was on Apple TV Plus. I still don't think that movie is massively well known beyond sort of film heads and animation heads. Yeah. Obviously, it got Oscar nominations, but, you know, even within that, best animated feature films can still fly quite significantly under the radar for general audiences. But it could be something where, like with Ghibli, where there was, you know, a long, long time before they had their crossover moment with Spirited Away, and really particularly in the last couple of years have gone totally global because of the Netflix deal. It feels like if Cartoon Saloon got that opportunity at some point down the line with the body of work that they already have, that suddenly people discover this deep bench of amazing stuff they've made, that would be an ideal situation. I hope they can stick it out until they get to that point without having to compromise anything.
I think perhaps the place most, like, general audiences know their work from are like the TV cartoons. You know, there's a couple that I'm not familiar with, but I like Skunk Fu I've not come across, which is a fantastic title, but Puffin Rock I have watched a few episodes of, and that is just beautiful. I mean, it's very much, it's aimed for quite a young audience, like a sort of, I think, maybe 4 or 5 year olds, or even younger perhaps. But I've recommended that to every single parent friend of mine. It is just delightful. It's so peaceful to watch. I mean, Ben was mentioning, like, hangover watches. I have definitely watched that when my head has been a bit sore. It is like the most wholesome. It's like an injection of wholesomeness into your face. And they adapted that into a feature length thing last year as well, which was,
yes,
I haven't seen, but I've heard is equally delightful.
It's super cute. I went along to that. I mean, even with my love of Cartoon Saloon, thinking, oh, come on, this is for baby. I'm not a baby, as my 3-year-old niece would say. And I was just totally charmed, because it is lovely. And it's also interesting to see an animated series for kids that is so clearly based specifically in a particular environment. These are specifically Irish animals that you get on the, you know, on the islands around Ireland. If cast your mind back, if you will, to the to Star Wars: The Last Jedi. I know you enjoyed doing that, Ben.
I do that every single day.
Think of Skellig Michael. Think of that island that Luke is on. Think of those kind of, you know, that environment basically is Puffin Rock. That is essentially Puffin Rock. The reason they came up with porgs is so they could paint over all the puffins that they couldn't otherwise easily remove from the background of those scenes. So yeah, it's very nice, again, how specific it is, how grounded it is, and just how lovely, again.
I mean, I would say I'm desperate now to see Cartoon Saloon do Porg Rock, but we already got their Star Wars crossover, because another way, hopefully, that they will get that wider, you know, international recognition is they did their short for Star Wars Visions Season 2, Screech's Reach, which is an incredible, incredible short. And I love that when they do something like that, when they're teaming up with Lucasfilm, they still really rooted their story in Irish folklore. They told like a scary banshee story in the realm of Star Wars, and still kind of rooted it in that folklore and mythology, and in their incredible, really beautiful art style, which they lean very heavily on textures, like watercolor textures, or in something like Wolfwalkers, the really like scratchy pencil textures. Really has such a characteristic flair to the animation itself, to the art style. I think what's interesting is that you sort of know a Cartoon Saloon thing when you see it, but also I think all of their projects do actually look quite distinctly different. They manage to create some kind of signature style. I think they have quite signature character models, very like rounded faces, big round eyes, lots of symmetry in their work that comes through in either compositions or in character models as well. And yet the tools that they're using to create these images feel really different each time. I love that when you see one of their films, you don't quite know what you're going to get on a visual level.
Absolutely. And I think you're absolutely right. It's very strong shapes as well, these geometric shapes, loads of spirals, obviously, and that is a sort of recurring theme in Irish art. So you get a lot of that in Secret of Kells and Song of the Sea and in Wolfwalkers. My God, when she goes into the woods in Wolfwalkers, there's just kind of spirals everywhere and all these Irish art shapes. But also in something like The Breadwinner, which is kind of an outlier. It's not the, you know, the Irish milieu, but... or a fantasy milieu like My Father's Dragon, but it has, again, taken its inspiration from traditional art, from sort of Islamic and pre-Islamic art. And that is, again, fascinating, the way that they've incorporated that into the whole.
Yeah, and there's something about the sort of the universal and the specificity kind of thing, you know, something like, an Irish traditional approach to animation can be applied to this very, very... culturally distinct story set in Afghanistan, you know, and this young girl, you know, dealing with the war on terror. You know, this is something miles apart in geographically and figuratively from Ireland, but those two sort of styles married so well together. And yeah, you can still recognize that as a Cartoon Saloon film. It, with everything you've just said, it has those geometric shapes and those abstract backgrounds and the character models and the really distinct look to it. The Breadwinner actually is a really beautiful film. I don't think enough people have seen it, even among Cartoon Saloon fans. It's really underrated. And
what do we call those, saloon heads? There may be a name for them. I don't know.
Saloonies?
Saloonies. I'm loony for saloony. I think The Breadwinner was superb. And again, kind of heartbreaking film. And Wolfwalkers, I think maybe their masterpiece so far. I think it's an example of what they do really well in other films, notably The Secret of Kells, which is mixing different animation styles for different moments in the story. So the town scenes are a completely different style, really, from when they go into the forest. But then marrying the two halves of this world so well and showing what happens when you cross from one to the other, and actually illuminating a piece of Irish history that is very little talked about, and that even I didn't know very much about. Interesting fun fact, Oliver Cromwell is still hated in Ireland. He was responsible for a man-made famine that killed more people than, as a percentage of the population, than the quote-unquote Great Famine, than the Potato Famine. He killed about half the population by the time he was done. It is still quite hard to book a hotel room in Ireland with the surname Cromwell, I've been told. Wow. And you will meet very few Irish people called Oliver to this day. So yeah, it was interesting to see that background used really effectively, but also really truthfully for this story.
I think that kind of specificity is part of the magic here. As we say, you know, I didn't know that level of history with Wolfwalkers and truly how terrible the English were to Ireland in that period of history. And to present that through folklore, through an animated film that will absolutely work for kids because it's centered on a girl who becomes a wolf at night. You know, it centers on something that's really kind of fantastical and relatable for kids to watch, but that comes infused with all of this history to tell it in that way. Again, I think does strike the Ghibli chord a bit in terms of so many of those Ghibli films, they introduce you to certain, not even necessarily bits of history, but certain bits of cultural viewpoints that are so intrinsic in that culture, but that unless you encountered it in this kind of story, you probably wouldn't, as an external observer, know those things. Mm. I think the storytelling becomes a really great avenue for expressing that cultural identity. And yeah, that comes through really strongly in Wolfwalkers, but in tons of their stories as well. I love the way that they go into the Selkie mythology and Song of the Sea.
Yeah.
And, you know, really, the you feel the sea spray in that film. You feel the coastal nature of it. I think they really seem to love expressing different elements of nature in Ireland through those films.
And just to go back to Wolfwalkers, the innovation of that film is actually really amazing. I mean, they had this thing they called wolf vision, you know, the scenes where you're seeing things from the perspective of the wolf character. And they really played with those animation styles. I think they visualized it in 3D at first in like computer, and then they like, I think basically just printed out stuff from the computers and then went, and the animators went over it in charcoal, you know, so it's really like bringing together these quite modern techniques with very, very traditional techniques. You know, there's the influence from like woodcut art and all of this sort of thing that has been happening in Ireland for centuries. Mm. And you see that throughout, you know, there's like the Secret of Cowles is very much, you know, that like you were talking about the Book of Cowles, Helen, it's the art style is very much influenced by it. And it's sort of in conversation with it.
And it goes back and forth between the sort of the Irish world, the forest world, the spirit world, if you like, but also these invading Vikings. And you've suddenly got all these reds and blacks and completely different animation style. So it really, you get the feel of the invasion, you get the feel of outsiders sort of coming in and trying to impose on the natural world. Okay, cards on the table. What is your favorite so far?
I'm going to say Song of the Sea. I don't know if that's just because it's the first love thing. It was the thing that really hooked me onto it. And there's just so much like sheer beauty in that film. But the thing that struck me about their Star Wars short, and the thing I really hope they do at some point, because they do take risks tonally, as you say, Breadwinner is, you know, a slightly harder-edged film. It's a 12A, it's not really a kids' movie. The thing they do in the Star Wars short is it's scary. The Banshee stuff is really scary. I want to see a cartoon saloon folk horror movie. Please do that next. If they do that, that would probably become my favorite. But for now, Song of the Sea for me.
All right. John, how about you?
Yeah, it's a tough one. I think I might go Secret of the Kells. It's just really unbelievably beautiful. But then they all are. I mean, honourable mention to Puffin Rock, because you know, who doesn't love puffins? But yes, I don't think they've made a bad film. That's the thing. I think I've seen all of their films, and they are all just brilliant. So
yeah,
it's like choosing your favourite child.
It is a little bit. I mean, I love dragons, so I'm tempted to say My Father's Dragon purely on that basis. I'm tempted by Secret of Kells as well, which I just think is jaw-droppingly gorgeous, as you say. I'm going to say Wolfwalkers because I feel like so far it feels like everything just working in sympathy. And in terms of what I'd like to see for them, from them in future, I actually do want more Irish mythology. I would love to see them tackle something really crazy and big. There's something called the Red Branch Cycle, which is kind of Ireland's Iliad. That's what I would like to see, ideally. But really, I'm here for whatever they want to do. It's all nice.
I'm curious to see where the sketch of me goes next. I think there's some real interesting...
That's the real question, yeah.
There's some real big narratives to be unfolded there.
Their true greatest work is the sketch of John.
And on that note, thank you very much to John Nugent.
Thank you.
Mostly for showing us your sketch, not really for anything you said, obviously. And thanks to Ben Travis.
Thank you. Goodbye.
And we'll see you soon. Rejoin us for the regular Empire podcast, obviously every Friday. Look out for more interview specials, spoiler specials, and general specials in future. See you soon. Bye-bye.